think you're gonna throw up, just swallow it.
Hopefully it doesn't come to that. I just got the whole recording.
The keyboard command is where you push the man up button.
Live from Left 4 Dead, this is the PC Gamer Podcast for April 23rd, 2009, episode number 173. On location at a rooftop overlooking beautiful Mercy Hospital in the distance in downtown Fairfield, Pennsylvania, where we hope our podcast won't be interrupted by some kind of pesky zombie apocalypse, because that would be totally unexpected and inconvenient. But just in case that happens, alongside me today I have Logan Zoe Decker, executive editor for PC Gamer.
Hey Lewis, isn't that the same outfit you were wearing yesterday?
And also, Dan Stapleton, Reviews Editor, a.k.a. Bill.
Why am I also? I should have been first. Or something other than also. Something more.
You hate
more,
not being first.
Yes, I do.
And finally, the guy that drives a motorcycle and has all the tattoos, Francis Josh Augustine, intern extraordinaire for PC Gamer Magazine.
Who also hates podcasts.
Fantastic. All right, so we're just going to kind of mosey through this level casually. We're playing on normal difficulty, no big deal. And we just thought it'd be a nice entertaining space for you guys and hopefully ourselves to go through the podcast. So the first topic we had this week, I was sort of surprised to see this. PopCap forwarded it to us this morning. We're going to start seeing PopCap games playable within World of Warcraft. Isn't that correct, Josh?
Yeah. Yeah, actually loaded it up today, tried it out. I have to say, I am very impressed. It's not just like a repeat of Peggle. There's 12 new maps styled after each of the capital cities, so they're totally new. And every time when you beat the level or if you clear a level, you get talent points that you can spend in a talent tree like you would in your World of Warcraft character, so you can like give your hits a chance to crit on pegs that'll like give you bonus points, and yeah. You can add like new strats. Like if you hit the green and then land in the bucket, a blue peg will turn green, so you get another green peg. And so it's pretty interesting.
I'm having a hard time with a smoker up here. Thanks.
Yeah, Logan, that's why you keep up with the group.
Well, I was getting a Molotov cocktail to help everybody.
That's very considerate. Yeah, aren't there, like, specific quest items or some sort of, like, Peggle-themed items you can unlock in WoW through that as well?
I haven't heard anything about that. There is the Peggle loot option, where instead doing random dice rolls to decide who gets loot, it loads up a Peggle window where you just have one shot, and everyone does a shot, and whoever gets the highest score gets the loot.
Wow.
That's really...
That's just going way too far.
Yeah, I can imagine people whining about that one because, you know, oh, it's a totally different game. It shouldn't matter if I'm good at that, if I get my loot. But I mean, it's all
opt-in, though, right? I mean...
Yeah, well, yeah. But, I mean, if your raid guild decides to use it, you have to basically do it.
Right. But that's your guild's decision, so it's...
Yeah, it is.
It's not like if you're casually joining up with some people in a raid or whatever, you're going to be forced to do that, right?
Right, no way. No, it's totally optional.
No, it's almost like a McDonald's-like situation where they have a sponsorship, and I don't know, it's definitely interesting. I'm surprised it kind of took them this long, honestly, but...
Yeah, and it is, and it makes, WoW about 2 weeks ago, I think, came out with rules that said you couldn't charge for any add-ons inside of WoW and all this stuff,
really?
So it makes sense now that you're seeing these kind of more commercial add-ons show up.
Well, it makes less sense, I think, because now they can't charge for it. I mean, it would have made sense before when they could charge for it.
Yeah, it makes sense why Blizzard did it. Because before, there were really no add-ons people were charging for, so it is a really weird rule.
Well, there were a few, weren't there? Wasn't there like an interface add-on that was like subscription-based?
Yeah, there was one that was kind of like a leveling, I think. But, I mean, that's one out of like... thousands.
Interesting. Well, we have another bit of MMO-related news as well, and that is NCSoft has hopped on the Steam bandwagon starting yesterday, I believe. City of Heroes, Guild Wars, and the Lineage series are all available on Steam.
Yeah, boy.
May as well be able to download those since you're going to be playing them online anyway.
Yeah, and City of Heroes is kind of doing like a new kind of PR push with their new smoker on the roof.
Oh, I see.
The new PR push with the new architect. And so they're putting it out in box stores again for the first time in like 4 years, I think. So it just makes sense if you're going to do that kind of a push, it needs to be on Steam too.
Oh, Josh, alerting the horde.
I was distracted.
I mean, either way, is up until yesterday, Warhammer Online was the only MMO available via Steam. Is that accurate? Am I forgetting any of them?
No, I think that's right.
Yeah, so, that's cool for Steam users, I guess. People that like to keep all their experiences within one service, maybe.
Yeah, it's definitely a good move for NCSoft. I mean, the more the better.
But if you... Sorry, I'm distracted by a horde of zombies that Josh caused.
Well, personally, I blame NCSoft. If they hadn't released it on Steam, I would have been talking about it, and I wouldn't have shot that car.
Blame shifting.
Somebody get Logan out.
Oh, sorry.
So, but one thing that opens the door to is Steam-based achievements for other MMOs.
Ooh, good point.
Which, may or may not be a big deal to, some people, but it opens the door.
Yeah. And do you think there's any potential for, friends lists, integrated friends lists with Steam, so you could find your friends in the MMOs easier?
Certainly. And another thing, I guess you could do this even if the game isn't actually on Steam, but using the Steam overlay web browser while you're in an MMO.
Yes, wow, that's great.
So there are some cool things that Steam has to offer MMOs.
Yeah.
Also, it tracks how many hours you spend in the game. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. Depends on how hopelessly addicted you are.
Yeah, it's kind of good and bad, because right now I always have the 10 Eagle Scream, some ridiculous number of hours, then my top plate is Team Fortress 2, 1 hour this week, because all my time is in Warcraft.
It's always funny. So the other kind of actually unexpectedly big announcement coming out of there's an event in England earlier this week was that Obsidian Entertainment is going to be working on a new Fallout game called Fallout New Vegas.
Well, hold up, Evan. First, you need to use your health pack before we go any further. There
Thank
we go.
You. Okay. Yeah, I'm not really able to communicate without it. my lips are scarred.
It was a very surprising announcement. I mean, we knew Bethesda was going to announce something in London this past week. We just didn't know that it was going to be Fallout related. I mean, we kind of assumed that the next game that Bethesda is going to put out is going to be an Elder Scrolls game because they've got that other big franchise to maintain. And it could well be that that's what they're going to do because they have outsourced the development of the next Fallout game. And this is a full standalone game. It's not an expansion pack, but it won't require Fallout 3 to play. But it'll basically be the same scale of game. Evan, you're all by yourself down there.
I'm fine. I killed the boomer. I'm good.
All right. It'll be the same scale of game, except developed by somebody else. Now the choice of developers is particularly inspired though, because Obsidian is home to a lot of the guys that were at Black Isle when they were developing the original Fallout and Fallout 2.
Right.
So we've got the original developers of Fallout back on the franchise, which is fantastic. Because those guys arguably are better at some of the things that Bethesda is weaker at, such as some elements of story and dialogue writing. Bethesda, they're pretty good, but they're not the best.
Mm-hmm.
These guys are really good at it, and it's as shown in some of the other games they've worked on. KOTOR 2, I believe, was one of the first projects that Obsidian worked on as a studio together.
Right.
Which had really good writing, and it did have the problem in the end where the ending was kind of not complete.
Mm-hmm.
Where LucasArts had forced the game out before it was done, apparently 4 months ahead of what was scheduled to be, when it was scheduled to be released. So they had a kind of a slapdash ending there, and they got a lot of flack for that. But the game up to that point was fantastic. And then they also worked on Neverwinter Nights 2, which uh, they that's another one of their weaknesses was oh crap, I've got a hunter on me. Okay, another one of their weaknesses is developing an engine.
Oh sure.
Which yeah, I've got smoked. Jeez. Okay, so so these guys are they're well known for producing the content, but not so much for the engine design, which is a very, very lengthy, expensive, tricky process of, you know, tracking down the bugs and eliminating those before they ruin the gameplay. So their track record for that is not great, but again, the content for Neverwinter Nights to like the story was seen as pretty good, though I never actually played it. I was talking to Deslock about this news. Of Obsidian going on getting on this project, and he's calling it the best RPG news in years.
Wow!
Yeah, coming from him, that's high praise.
Yeah, that's a great compliment. I mean, like you were saying, it's a really interesting strategy from Bethesda's standpoint to shovel that off. I mean, it's got to be, like you said, it's got to be related to another Elder Scrolls game. But at the same time, with how successful Fallout 3 was, with you know, the way they're cranking out DLC, it's surprising that, you know, they even trust another studio. I mean, Obsidian.
Yeah, if you're going to trust anybody, it would be these guys.
Sure.
So. And Fallout is, you know, if anything, more their baby than it is Bethesda's.
Yeah,
so
point.
You know they're going to take good care of it. The other question that's popped up is how much of the original design for Fallout 3 is going to make it into Fallout New Vegas? Because there was an original game that got, you know, a little ways along in development before Interplay canceled it, called codenamed Van Bruin. That was canceled before it was, you know, brought to fruition. But they got to have like a, you know, like reams of design documents and there's a witch in there.
Very convenient, actually. Yeah.
Whoa. Oink. And a smoker. Yeah, so they've got to have a bunch of design documents with all kinds of quests pre-designed and everything that could almost certainly be adapted to the new format.
Here we go.
Oh, so it will be interesting to hear from those guys what they have in mind for New Vegas.
Yeah, no kidding.
And these are the same guys, by the way, that designed the new Reno area in Fallout 2.
That's right.
That might give you an idea.
So the main topic I want to bring up for you guys, I mean, that was kind of the best bits of news this week, with certainly New Vegas being the top of that, which we hope to have some coverage soon in our issues later this year. While we're very conveniently here in this, you know, one of the best co-op games I've ever played, I thought it'd be a nice setting to sort of reflect on good co-op games we've played. What makes a good co-op game in terms of mechanics? What games really need co-op or need to be revisited with co-op? And just anything along those lines that comes to mind for you guys.
And Left 4 Dead is really the main co-op game I've ever played. I mean, I was never that into it before, into co-op gaming, possibly or you know, partially at least, because there weren't a whole lot of co-op games for the PC. There have been, like X-Wing versus TIE Fighter at a certain point had co-op.
Mm-hmm.
But outside of that, yeah, not a whole lot.
Yeah, I'm the same way. This is Left 4 Dead's the first one that I've ever wanted, you know, to be co-op. And, you know, and it was always co-op, so.
Designed from the ground up to be co-op.
Yeah, not, you know.
And it's not a strong single-player game.
No.
Well, my favorite co-op was definitely Dungeon Siege. I'd bought that right when me and my friends were house-sitting all weekend, so we'd brought over our computers, and we just set up a LAN game, and we just played Dungeon Siege all weekend. It was really
fun.
The thing, I like co-op games to be fairly easy, and have kind of like movie moments where you can just be like, man, that was so cool, do you remember when we did that? I don't really want it to be necessarily hard or difficult, where we're kind of losing or having to focus really hard. The best part about co-op is just talking and making jokes while you're playing. So I want it to be pretty easy.
Yeah.
Oh, where'd that tank come from? Oh, that's right. I have my music turned off, so I didn't hear him coming.
Yeah, same here.
Oops.
It's okay. I'm a casualty. I can take it.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, Dungeon Siege, I'm really a fan of those like isometric dungeon crawlers for co-op. I have a lot of good experiences in Titan Quest and Diablo especially. I'm just crawling. It's really just a casual pace, and you can attack situations how you want to. You can run back to town. You can build characters that complement your friend's character. It's sort of... I don't want to liken it to an MMO too much, but it's sort of an MMO without too much... too many features that make you come back to the game and like really invest too hard in it. It can be a little bit more casual, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's kind of like an MMO with just your friends. You don't have to worry about all the other people.
That's a good way of putting it. We were talking about XCOM this week for an article we're doing, and that's certainly a great candidate to bring back, I think, with some sort of cooperative play.
XCOM, I don't see it as a good cooperative game because it's turn-based. That would not be one of my good candidates. I think it would make a fantastic play by email.
Get inside.
Multiplayer game.
Oh dear. Oh no. This is bad.
Yeah, I guess that's a good way of putting it. Somehow, I like the idea of just having a friend on the same world that I'm playing on and having them build bases. I mean, maybe it wouldn't need to interact in terms of the gameplay and the turn-based stuff. I don't know. I like the idea of it. I just finished our review for Xenoclash, and you might want multiplayer in that game adversarial multiplayer in it before co-op, but I got to think that would be a fun experience. I really enjoyed the fighting mechanics. I might talk about that a little bit more later when we're doing our playlist, but that would be a good one. Probably the other real PC classic for co-op for me has been Rainbow Six Vegas, especially the terrorist hunt mode, which is honestly, I don't know, it honestly ranks right up there with a lot of Left 4 Dead's modes for me, because you're sort of thrown in this environment with up to four players. The enemies are sort of spawned randomly. You're in the game's multiplayer maps, and you just have a set number of basic enemies to take care of, and just the way they appear, and you have to stick together, and how vulnerable you are coming around corners. It's just a great experience to deconstruct with other people, and it's pretty much infinitely replayable, too. It's great.
We're also having a good time playing Demigod cooperatively.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, skirmish mode Demigod has been, not skirmish, but against AI, has been fantastic. Just getting to know the abilities through that and trying out different characters.
And it is a bit different. I mean, I guess you have to draw a line with co-op between multiplayer games played against the AI and playing in a scripted sequence game. An unscripted game like a multiplayer game like Demigod.
Certainly. All right. Well, if that's what we have to share on co-op, I would ask our humble zombie overlord Andy Bauman to maybe queue up some great questions that we got from last week. Thanks for sending those in, guys. Let's head to the right here, down the alley, look for weapons.
Hey, this is Mike from Denver, Tycook on Steam. I was wondering, over the years you guys have probably played many multiplayer games. What's your favorite multiplayer map from any game? Personally, I have to say mine is 2 Fort from Team Fortress 2, just because of the symmetry and how the map is laid out. It's great. Anyway, I love the podcast. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Oh my gosh, not 2 Fort. Please not 2 Fort. Okay. I need to rant a little bit on this. This is a great question, and it's actually really appropriate for where we are. But 2-4, it turns into a stalemate. It's maybe the best public multiplayer map, because you can just come in and there's really no winning or losing. Usually, you're just kind of going back and forth, and there's sentry guns and bases that you can't get past, and it's fun for just killing people that are new to the game. But it's not necessarily a balanced or interesting multiplayer map, I think. But on that note, CS Office for Counter-Strike and Counter-Strike Source has a really pretty special place in my heart. Just the design and how bright it is, and it has the right amount of asymmetry where the terrorists are sort of, they can choose to bunker themselves or they can choose to flank through the garage, and the CTs have a sniping spot that's closer to them, and it's just... the best multiplayer maps they build this sense of expectations, right? They build sort of mental choke points that you know, okay, 6 seconds into this match, I know their team can at maximum be right here. Okay, I'll kill this witch. And nice one, Dan. So you sort of know what to expect, and you're adjusting between rounds, you know, your strategy, and they just build room for that kind of round-to-round tactics and adjustment. I think a lot of the classic and the stock Counter-Strike maps are definitely qualify for that. Dust and Dust 2. So that'd probably be mine.
Oh, I never have that much attachment to a map. I'd say the one that probably sticks in my mind the most is the Quake 3 map with the bouncy dealies. I forget what it's called.
I was thinking the same one in space.
Dunk. I do not remember what it's called.
Nice throw.
Yeah, I love Toy Fort on Team Fortress 2. I am a total sucker for any of those you're a miniature person in a big house levels.
Yeah, Toy Soldier.
Have you tried the Toy Soldier level for Fear 2 yet?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, one of them's in a pinball. Pinball game, which is excellent. And there's like a sandbox one.
Yeah, that sounds perfect. The first ever kind of game I played like that was Half-Life. Not Counter-Strike, but just the original Half-Life multiplayer. And me and my brother and my dad.
Oh, oh shit.
Help.
Did I? Oh, I swore. Sorry.
It's okay. Actually, the characters swear in the game anyway, so. My favorite Team Fortress 2 map kind of fluctuates depending on how much we play anything.
Come in. Shit.
Man, we're getting swarmed here.
Smoker's got me behind the truck.
Wow.
Shit.
Yeah, we need to regroup. We need to get that smoker, Dan.
Stand down.
Got him.
Oh, I'm getting swarmed.
If only Logan hadn't sworn.
Zombies hate that.
Swearing alerted the horde.
Yeah. Zombies in their clean mouths. I'm getting Josh up. Yeah, my favorite Team Fortress 2 map kind of fluctuates. I guess there's one we play on our server called PL Hoodoo, and it's a push cart map. So it's like Gold Rush, but it's a little more, I don't know, there's some narrow areas. Just the mechanics of it are really great. Some great choke points that you have to work to. I mean, that's kind of what Team Fortress 2 is all about, choke points that you have to get past. So there's definitely a tank here on me.
Hello, this is James from Ohio. I don't think that the developer of the game should get a rating just because it had a crappy launch date, but I do think that the consumer should be aware of whether or not that company or that game franchise has had problems in the past with a crappy release or whatnot. One other question I had was, how do you go about getting a hold of a publisher or a game developer that might be making games in the future to maybe put certain content in that you might find interesting? I've tried to get a hold of somebody at Company Heroes for some ideas or suggestions that I've had in the past, but didn't have any luck getting a hold of somebody. Just wondering if you guys had any idea how somebody like me that follows a game and really enjoys it and possibly has some ideas for some content to be added to the game, how would we get a hold of somebody to submit?
Well, generally, your best avenue for that is going to be through forums. If you just want to get your ideas out there,
yeah.
A lot of developers actually read their forums, and you know whether or not they're posting, they're reading, because they do want to know what their community says. They want to know. They want, you know, if there is a great idea that somebody just puts out there, that they would love to have it. You can't really like contact them directly and say, you know, I've got this idea for a game, you know, because so for a variety of reasons, some of them legal, some of them, you know, they have ideas they want to do long before they're going to do yours. So,
you know, they wouldn't want to pick up a specific idea because then you could, you know, claim that, exactly. But, you know, general things, you know, like on forums, like Dan said, that's by far the easiest and most efficient way to do it. And I'm being, my guts are being torn out by Hunter for doing that. Thank you very much, Josh.
Yeah, I mean,
great.
I want to say most or all studios have a dedicated community manager for the games that, I mean, part of their job is to take care of the fans, take care of their questions and complaints through the forums and email. So at the very least, you got one dedicated guy that's there reading most of the forums, I'd say.
And if they see something that catches their eye, they will bring it back to the guys making the game.
Yeah, World of Warcraft has a ton of community managers on their forums. They actually have a suggestions forum that they do read, and they do comment back a lot of the time, like, oh, that's a really good idea, and then you'll see it in the next beta patch or something that.
Oh god!
And Warhammer Online also just created an official tank, an official forum.
Official tank.
They have.
This is the Warhammer Online official tank we're fighting right now.
Well, that tank didn't take too much damage. With the legality issue, I know a lot of the contact pages for certain games, like they say directly on there, we will delete any email immediately that has, a game suggestion. Please don't forward them to us. Because they can, they just want to avoid that kind of hassle, I guess, is what it is.
Yep.
All right, Andy, fire us off another question.
Hi, guys. I wanted to reply to your question about Demigod and if it should be hurt for a shaky launch. I think in the case of shaky launches, every situation needs to be taken individually, every game. And in the case of Demigod, they were screwed over by GameStop and other factors like the pirate situation that they never expected to encounter. And I think in their case, they deserve credit for being able to fix the problem so quickly instead of being punished, like some reviews around the web have done, for having those problems at all. Also, I think it's kind of sad that so many articles around the web, blogs like Kotaku, have focused on piracy as this problem when Brad Wardell never made that out to be the issue. They should be commended for instead fixing this problem that piracy caused so quickly. Just my thoughts. Thanks for the podcast and the magazine. Bye.
Well, that is a terrific point.
It is, and that's one thing that makes it really hard. I mean, one thing that you have to be aware of, though, is if you don't fault a game for this kind of thing, there's no way to be certain that the problems will be fixed. So it's hard to give them that credit if you're not absolutely certain they deserve it. You could be burned. I mean, there could be more multiplayer problems that develop later as a result of some of the work they're doing. So it's a very sticky situation. It's something we have to struggle with all the time. The other thing about Demigod in particular is, I don't know if you've been keeping up with all the stuff Brad Wardell has been saying. Logan, where are you going? Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, okay, there you are. Sorry, I thought you were behind us. You're ahead of us. All right. the other thing, hey, stop closing doors in my face. Okay, as I was saying, the other thing is Brad Wardell has actually been very – he's the CEO of Stardock, president and owner, I guess, of Stardock.
Yep.
He has been very outspoken and very forthcoming about all the problems they've been having. In his most recent post, he's been talking about how piracy has been a contributing factor to the problems they're having, but he also owned up to some of the fault on their end, where they just didn't anticipate quite as many people wanting to play online. Their main experience to date had been with Sins of a Solar Empire, which a lot of people were just playing single player, so they weren't expecting the load that they got of for server loads with Demigod. Yeah. So, he owned up to it a bit, saying, that was our mistake, but we're fixing it. And they, to their credit, like I personally have had very little trouble getting Demigod games running, even from day one.
Yeah, I mean, on day one, it took us, admittedly we were playing on the West Coast at night. It took us maybe 25 minutes to get it started, but after that, right, it's been pretty smooth.
And that was largely because Norm's router wasn't playing nice. Oh, I just blew up a boom.
Okay, I just threw a pipe bomb.
Great.
Hopefully.
Good job.
Thanks, Logan.
Oh, and I think it blew up on my face.
Yeah, but getting back to this guy's other question, other point about, I was kind of frustrated in the same way that some websites reported, this number that Brad put in a blog post that, maybe could have been made a little bit clearer, but I mean, there are a ton of headlines that day about Demigod having like 180,000 pirates and only 12,000 users. That was only during a peak hour time that the game was being played. That number of 12,000 doesn't represent the sales of the game total or all users. It just represented one point in time in the game that happened to be very active. So, yeah, that was just kind of a frustrating aside to the situation that unfortunately probably painted this idea of piracy being completely rampant and like 10-to-1 piracy ratios or something against paid users. That isn't really true, I think.
May or may not be. I mean, the question is whether that 100,000 pirates trying to play, was that number also the total? Was that the number, the total number, or was that also a peak user number?
Yeah.
So it wasn't entirely clear, but the problem there was that it created the perception that Demigod was not selling well, when it actually was.
An interesting fact about this elevator, it starts on fourth floor, of course, because that's the number of the game, but it stops on floor 28, which is kind of in a nod to 28 Days Later, I think.
That's very subtle. Right.
And along the same lines, Lewis's outfit, you'll notice, resembles Sean from Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah,
of course. So lots of little tidbits in there. I mean, the fact that the early part of the game takes part in Pennsylvania. Most of the Romero zombie movies take place in Pennsylvania as well. So, just some kind of cute stuff in here. And actually, it's thanks adorable. To the guy that... it's absolutely adorable. and thanks to the guy that sent in that question from Pontiac, Michigan, the town I was born in, incidentally enough.
And has since escaped from.
That's right. Semi-gratefully, as much as I love Michigan. But
Logan, you're all by yourself over there.
Yeah, this
I'm in a corner, though. I'm safe.
This is amazing.
Yeah, sure you are. You got to catch up with everybody else. It's a bad situation.
Somebody was right next to me. Oh.
I was, because I didn't want you all by yourself.
All right, Mr. Bauman, fire away when ready.
I was getting a snack.
Hi, my name is Dennis from Salt Lake City, Utah. I consider myself a collector of computer games going back to my early Atari 800 days and all of the elaborate packaging that the Infocom games used to come in, and of course all the way up through modern times with the lunchbox edition, for example, of Fallout 3. I think my hobbies days are numbered as far as collecting box editions are concerned, because eventually we'll have an all digital distribution model. So that's the one downside of that model for me. Other than that, do you guys see any problems with the digital distribution model in the future, or do you think it's going to be become generally accepted and an overall good thing? Again, love the podcast. Keep up the good work.
I think the days are numbered, but I think it's a pretty high number. It'll be a long time, I think, before anybody completely abandons the retail space. So you're still going to have the collector's editions that you can get, because there are a bunch of people that like you that like the packaging, and retailers and publishers know that, so they're not going to turn away your money for a while yet, until digital distribution becomes much, much, much bigger.
Yeah, the only problem I could see with digital distribution is if something goes through where they do start charging for bandwidth, and if it's really high, maybe you wouldn't want to pay. If games got to be 15, 20 gigs, maybe you wouldn't want to pay the cost in bandwidth, but I mean, sure. It would be really high to offset it.
That did threaten the digital distribution bandwagon for a little while there, but it just, Time Warner just backed off of that, so that's not going to happen anytime soon either.
But I think it's already a wonderful thing. I mean, here we are playing Left 4 Dead, which, was a digitally distributed product.
Not exclusively.
No, but, it's like, and that's basically how I get all my games, and now I can download them anywhere and play them on any computer, whether it's at work or at home, and I don't have to deal with a lot of the hassles that, as you, a collector, remember, from games, so even going through manuals and having to find the seventh
discs.
Word of the, So, yeah, it's already become a better world, for gamers.
Right now we've got a bunch of people out there screaming at us because they are on dial-up
another tank.
By virtue of geography consequence of geography, they're stuck in an area that does not have broadband available. So for some people, Steam is more of a curse than a blessing. But that was
Ow.
A bummer.
Uh-oh. Zombie water balloon.
Yeah. But for the majority of gamers out there who are internet on broadband internet, Steam is a godsend.
Yeah,
for the most part, there are legitimate grievances with it.
I mean, I definitely think like you were saying, Dan, collector's editions are really in no danger of going anywhere when there's so much money to be made off them. I mean, there's a segment of safely, depending on the game, 10%, 15% sometimes. People that are willing to buy plastic helmets and Ghostbusters toys and things like that. That'll come along with like an art book and things like that. There was actually a recent gaming marketing conference, and that was one of their big topics, that they're able to make sometimes $1 million or a couple $1 million off these products and build enthusiasm for the game. And I mean, it's really gone well for a lot of people, especially on consoles. So.
I think Fallout 3 cleaned up those awards, didn't they?
Yeah,
the marketing awards. You know, they had a lot of cool marketing for that game. So just for the listeners' reference, if you're not watching this, we've reached the climactic scene here.
On No Mercy, yep, we're scaling the rooftop and waiting to hit the radio button. There we go.
Did you hit it?
I did.
I'm scared.
Hang in there, Logan.
All right, this would be a pretty good time to talk about the survival mode, which we're not playing right now, but I guess we might do after this, right?
Yeah, we could jump into one. We wanted to do it, but it's so hectic. Obviously, when you're one of the features of the survival mode is it's time based. You're trying to get a best time and stay alive the longest. But the game is scaling upward as you progress and throwing everything it can at you.
It's all based on these climactic events where the zombies just come at you in huge numbers. Ah, and a boomer exploded on me. And it's supposed to be something you can jump in really quickly and play through without the prerequisite, you know, fighting through three or four stages of just killing, you know, run of the mill zombies. You can get to these really intense action sequences right away.
Yeah, and there's definitely value in that. I mean, a month or so after it launched.
Ah, smoker.
Even then, we were sort of like, well, do we really want to commit, you know, an hour and a half to a campaign and versus? And it's nice to be able to come home and jump into a 10-minute session or two and, you know, have it be really intense and really challenging.
And it is nice, very challenging.
Yeah, because most of the time, like, the game only lasts at max, like, 5-6 minutes.
If you're lucky.
I do have somebody on my leaderboard. Admittedly, it's the guy that runs L4DMods.com, but he has a 35-minute record on
the
Lighthouse Battle. Yeah, I'm going to assume it's not an exploit, but the guy knows what he's doing. So
35 minutes. We had trouble lasting more than, like, two.
Yeah. Also, tank.
Yeah, that Lighthouse map, there's one new map. It's based on any of the other ones. It's a lighthouse, and it's different from the rest of them in that it's much more like destructible than everything else. Like the walls just come down like tissue paper. So when you think you're safe, you're back into a corner. All of a sudden, the walls come down and you're being hit from all sides.
Yeah, we were sort of talking about this on the way to lunch. There's sort of like a, I don't know if this was intentional on their part. I mean, it's definitely more due to gameplay mechanics, but like there's a garage area that has a brick wall and there's a, you know, the house has a bathroom and whatnot. And based on your experience in No Mercy in different levels.
Oh, shit.
You're used to a few set walls breaking down and being busted through. I'll pick you up here, Logan, or actually
Dan,
Josh has it. But like you don't expect the tank to just be able to maul through a brick wall and jump on through. So
if anything could do it, it would be a tank.
I guess, yeah. But it is kind of surprising in a fun way the first couple times you play through it. Yeah.
And it really does catch you off guard pretty effectively.
But we can hop in the playlist if we'd like.
Yeah, why don't we?
We're
in the finale of the game here. I may as well head towards the finale of the podcast.
Sounds good. All right, so for myself, I just finished playing Xenoclash, which is, I mean, I'll reserve a lot of my comments for, you'll see them in the July issue, in the review, but...
Well, the game is out now. I think we can talk about it. So.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's one of the most original experiences I've ever played, honestly, in a game. Just one of the best parts, and something I reflected in my review, is that the art design and the... Just the types of worlds that you're in are so indescribable or just very hard to describe that it's almost fulfilling to be somewhere that is unfamiliar and so asymmetrical and unusual. And it's so refreshing. It reminds you what independent developers can do, you know, when they really execute something, when they want to.
When they're talented enough and when they've got the resources and, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure how big their team is, but they're called Ace Team, and the developer's called Ace Team, and they're from Chile, actually, in South America. And the reason it's called Ace Team is it's three brothers, I think it's Andres, Carlos, and Eduardo, I think. So it's funny because siblings and sibling rivalry is actually a theme in the game as well, so there's kind of a connection there, but that's what I've been playing mostly. I still need to go back and finish Fear 2. I got really close. I'm like the seventh chapter, and I just need to complete that soon as well. So I'm looking forward to coming back to that.
Logan.
We're in a helicopter.
Hi. Poker.
Oh!
Ooh, Hunter in the helicopter. Get to the chopper.
Oh, jeez. Tank sitting in the helicopter.
That's really unfortunate.
Yeah, this is a... Hey, Josh.
Yeah, Josh, you need to get in the helicopter.
Leave him. Leave him.
We can't leave.
I'm trying.
Josh, you really need to get in.
God.
Thank you.
Did you just die already? Wait until he broke my kneecaps?
Yeah. You know, in real life, we would totally have left the intern. I mean, that interns are just... That's what they're here for.
You throw them a power bar, and you're like, adios.
Good luck.
Best of luck.
I'm just the red shirt.
That's funny. Oh, you guys both died?
I lived!
No, you didn't. The tank got you just as we left. And actually, the reason that it ended was because you and Evan and Josh were killed.
Yeah, thankfully. Jeez. So thanks for taking one for the team. Dan and I will repopulate the world. And
No.
Whoa. No.
Oh, wait, you weren't, Zoe? That's right. Oh, shoot.
I did not
consent.
Only
in Iowa.
That's right. Oh, man. So, all right, Dan, what's your playlist been? I know we've been playing some Demigod, but other than that...
Other than Demigod, I have been playing... I just finished the Sims 3 review, and that game is not out yet, so I can't talk about it too much here. And we've also got... we've been playing Left 4 Dead. Mostly the last few nights and in my free gaming time, I've been splitting between Left 4 Dead and Demigod. Leaning more heavily towards Demigod, actually, because I do love Left 4 Dead, but in the grand scheme of things, Demigod is maybe a little bit more to my type of game. I'm having a lot of fun with the generals. I kind of want to play the assassins because they I think it's easier in that you don't have to manage your troops. You know, the assassin is just a single demigod that deals a lot of damage, whereas the general he spawns a bunch of minions and uses a lot of support powers, but. Although he himself still does the majority of the damage, I think, but I'm enjoying sticking with the generals because it is a little bit more of a challenge. I started out with Sedna, who rides the big white lion panther kind of thing.
Polar Express.
She's a healer, but I've kind of migrated over to the vampire. What was the vampire's name again, Josh?
I keep forgetting it.
Erebus, yeah. Who has the really cool powers where he can turn into a mist and damage a big group of enemies. That's where I'm at right now. I think awesome. With Sedna, the problem is she doesn't really have a good area of effect power. So it's more difficult for her to level up by killing off a bunch of minions quickly.
So, Logan, I know we're in fourth week, but have you found any time for anything?
Yeah, I've been playing Fear 2 a lot. The thing is, my thing with Fear 2 is that I love horror. I love horror shooters, right? So you've got an automatic, 20 points right there, right on the top of everything else. But it's frustrating, for the... Yeah. And if everyone who read our review, they know why already now. Because, just the weapons just aren't quite there. And in the sense of contact, you have and the power of the weapons and their ability to blast things back just doesn't have that sort of, that visceral feel to it that it ought to have. But I love the atmosphere of it. I love the franchise, so I'm definitely enjoying it.
What's interesting though is if you assume that every shooter gets an extra 20 points, every horror game gets an extra 20 points, that sheds a lot of new light on your review of Alone,
Alone
in the Dark.
Alone in the Dark,
which I think got a total of about 20 points.
No way! I would rather have my fingernails pulled out with a pair of pliers than go through that again. And I'm a big horror fan, but that's not going to happen to me again. Uh-uh. Oh no.
I've been playing some Legends of Zork on the browser. You only get 30 points a day, so it's like 10, 15 minutes of play time, you know, unless you want to buy more. So I've been doing that, you know, as kind of like my morning routine. I'm really enjoying it.
Awesome.
It's really simple. I mean, you just hit go adventuring, repeat, and it just shows like the little fight. But it's really fun. I like it. It's kind of a brainless kind of way to wake up in the morning.
Absolutely.
Is there any better way to wake up in the morning than a brainless one?
I'm sure there's some. I've also been playing a bit of Demigod. I'm enjoying the generals as well, like Dan. I've been playing with Oak a bit, which is a lot of fun, throwing down the flag and then getting all your spirits to raise. Oh my god, that's a lot of tanks.
Is that like 4, you think? I don't know. 5?
That's like 5. That's like 6, yeah.
I was just tossed off the roof like a snot rag.
I'm going to melee him.
So what other classes have you played as, Josh?
I've been playing as the archer, who for the life of me I can never remember his name.
Regulus,
yeah. Regulus is, I'm really enjoying him because you can kind of focus on the other demigods. We can put a mark on them where if they use any of their special abilities, they take a bunch of damage, and you can snipe them from long range. So you can kind of keep them away from the mobs you're trying to farm for XP. You're pretty much guaranteed to have kind of your own little area to grind and get levels really fast.
Mm-hmm. Which you really need as Regulus, because he's another one that doesn't have a good area of effect power. So he's not good at leveling up in the early game, which is when it's really competitive. So, yeah, so you were playing online last night, right? Did you have any trouble getting into a game?
It took a while. Like some games, it took maybe like 5 minutes for everyone to get connected. But once everyone got connected, I didn't have any problems. So at most is probably 15 minutes in between trying to connect to that game. That game didn't work. Let's try the next one. That one doesn't work. Another one, the guy was in New Zealand, and so his ping was just terrible. So that game kind of fell apart. But once I got in the game, it was really smooth. So it wasn't as bad as I had heard. So I'm wondering if they've made improvements since.
They definitely have made improvements since launch.
Yeah, I mean, it would be great if you could just do it through Steam or something, but I mean,
I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, or have some sort of way to connect with some other software, but I mean, it's not terrible.
Mm-hmm. Well, when it was Norm and I, when it was getting kind of rocky the first couple days, we used Hamachi, which is a program that lets you create a virtual network, which is a little dangerous in terms of letting people in your computer, but it basically lets you play over LAN through Hamachi, even though you're not in the same physical network.
Right, so it's like you would be hosting, in the game menu, you would host a LAN game.
Yeah.
There's another utility out there we're tinkering around a little bit with called Game Ranger that does a similar thing.
Hmm. Is that more stable then? Because I imagine the ping isn't any better.
No, it's the same. It's just simulating a LAN.
Yeah.
So if for example the multiplayer servers were to go down on any game, you could host a LAN game, and play it that way.
Oh, okay.
So for any game where the multiplayer service is not working, that'll work.
Evan betrayed us.
I may have laid a witch directly in front of you.
Yeah. See, this is why I quit out of the game a couple minutes ago.
He's playing like Neo here, dropping tanks everywhere, and
yeah.
I don't think I ever saw Neo do that.
It's Neo-esque.
Right. It's Neo-esque. That's great.
Evan's kind of like our dungeon master then.
Yeah.
All right.
And then now,
this is the dark side of The Sims 3.
That's
what we're playing right now. Guys, I'm walled up and there's no toilet. Help.
Yeah. Do we hear from Josh? Oh, okay, we've heard from everybody now, except for you, yeah. Evan. Okay.
Andy's the only remaining one. Andy, are you there?
So yeah, Andy, what were you playing?
It's on the podcast comments. Yeah, you're liking Far Cry 2 a little bit more now?
Yeah, I started back into Far Cry 2 just because I was like, well, I read how to play it sort of more of a just get used to being attacked all the time and try and sneak your way around everything and play it a little bit more slowly instead of trying to drive all the way across the map to get to your objectives. Just gung-ho, because you get overwhelmed really quickly and then it's not as much fun. But there's something, I just really like open world games. I just like existing in a world, whether it's
sure.
GTA or back in the day like Mafia or Far Cry 2, where you know, it's sort of an open world in Far Cry 2 the same way it is in those games. And it makes it a lot of fun. You can just sort of wander around if you feel like it. And it really is just a shooter. Like Far Cry 2, you just shoot people, and that's what you have to do. Like, there's no getting around it. There's no faction, like, you know, talks and talking your way out of situations. You just go and you have to shoot everybody that comes near you, pretty much. And once you get into that, like, fact in your head, then it becomes, like, a really fun game. And it's not as bad as I thought it was originally. So,
do you ever get kind of frustrated with the open world games that you don't have, like, a specific objective, or you don't know where to go to find the next quest, or you just kind of enjoy kind of wandering till you stumble on stuff?
Yeah, certainly, like, if it goes too long before finding sort of the storyline objectives to kind of advance the story, then I would get annoying. But in Far Cry 2, you can just pull up your map and pretty much figure out where the story objectives are and where the just assassination missions are and stuff like that. So
yeah, okay. Open world games really need some kind of direction. Without that, they get old much sooner than they should. And like GTA, if there were no missions to drive you, would be really dull after you get sick of blowing stuff up, which would take a little while
for sure.
But it would get really old, and the Sims in particular would get old really quickly if there weren't directions, if there weren't things to work towards.
Oops, here you go, Logan. Okay,
thank you.
So with that, I think we'll wrap things up this week.
You know, I do want to thank whoever the person who posted on the podcast forums that the old Apple game I was talking about on the last podcast was called The Prisoner, and I think it was a tie-in with the TV series, and it was really, really good because the whole goal of the game was that you didn't give up a four-letter code, four-number code or something like that, and the game at one point to try to get you to give up this code even threatens to format the floppy disk that you're playing off of.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. So whoever whipped that one out, well done. I just threw a med pack at a zombie. That was rather ineffectual of me. I apologize.
It's like my XCOM tactics.
Exactly. Take that.
It's not exactly like those old fantasy RPGs where you can heal skeletons and zombies in order to damage them.
Yeah. So. I think that works in Oblivion, actually.
Oh, really? Mm. So that just about wraps things up for us this week. Let us know if you like this approach. Hopefully, we'll be able to produce a video on it. If it's interesting for you guys, if it's totally boring and annoying and distracting, let us know. Just trying something different. Hope you like it. If you'd like to submit questions for next week, give us a ring at the same number as always, 877-404-1337, extension 724. Or you can just shoot an email on over to pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com. That about does it for us this week. Hope you enjoyed episode 173 and journeying with us through Fairfield toward No Mercy Hospital. For Josh Augustine, super producer Andy Bauman, Logan Decker, Dan Stapleton, and myself, Evan Lottie, see you guys next week. Take care.
I'm now deceased.
Oh, dear.